series of cassettes regarding my experiences here on the ranch. I was born in Pasadena, California, February 26, 1912. My mother was Hattie Clearwater, and my father was Ernest T. Clearwater. An older brother, Clifford, and an older sister, Doris, who is still living, by the way. So I was born in 1912. That makes me, well, like my mother would say, this side of 40. Now, I think the best thing to do, the best way to do this, make this record, just talk about one thing at a time. We'll categorize it, and we'll talk about the animals, domestic animals, and wild animals, and we'll talk about the man himself, the Reagan's family, and just anything else that I can think about, and we'll do it that way. We'll be unable to recall everything that happened years that I have been here. However, I will recall as much as I can. If I should jump around, you know, date-wise, time-wise, please forgive me. My coming up here all started about, it was long about around the 1st of December, 1974, while I was working for an outfit company in Goleta, known as Goleta Valley Paint and Glass. I was only working part-time, and due to my number of various experiences in the past, I thought that perhaps I might like to have a job working outdoors and where I could use my experiences and talents. And when I saw a little article in the Santa Barbara News Press relating the purchase of a ranch in the San Ynez Mountains by Governor Reagan, I thought, well, now I must do something about it, and it bugged me until I did do something about it, and I mailed him a letter, as well as a resume and a copy of my work experience. Mailed it off about the middle of December. I really didn't expect to hear from him very soon, knowing he was preparing to leave office. His second term as governor was expiring, and Christmas holidays coming on, and New Year's and so forth. But I didn't expect to hear from him eventually, however, I thought that perhaps it would just be the usual form letter stating that they received my application and they had filed it in case they needed somebody, they would contact me. However, it was just about the middle of January when one afternoon while I was working at the Goleta Valley Paint and Glass, that my wife, Coletta, called me and rather excitedly stated that she had received a call from Ronald Reagan and he would like to speak with me. And that was good news because I thought maybe something might come up, and sure enough it did that night. Then I got back, he called me about 7:30, and we made arrangements for Chloe and I to meet me and Barney up at the gate on the Fuji Road at 10 o'clock in the morning of January 20th. And we met him there, of course, and he went in and chose the ranch, and it was cold, blustery days. And the house was in just a little shack, and me and Barney were working on it. It was a rather miserable-looking situation, but we didn't get together that day, but we did a little bit later. We did get together, and we made arrangements for me to come up here to the ranch, and as of March 1st, 1975, I would take it over, and I would stay in the trailer here at night, mainly to see that everything was all right at night, and I would continue to work part-time at my job in Goleta. So on the morning of March 1st, 1975, were coming up to work on their house, and they had two dogs. We had old Fuzzy, who was a nice Belgian Shepherd type of dog. He was about 8 years old, I guess, at the time. And then there was Muffin. Muffin was a cockapoo. Anyhow, sometime in the night before I got there, the dogs had gotten out of the fence that they were in. They had a fence around the house, and dogs were kept down there. They'd gotten out, and they'd been out associating with skunks, and they both were very, very, very odoriferous, if you know what I mean. So the Reagan's coming, and I decided I'm going to have to do something with those dogs, and so I put them in a yard, more or less, down here. We called a run, if you will. It wasn't really a run. It was just sort of like a chicken pen, more or less. But I put them in there, and then when the Reagan showed up, I went down and I told the government what had happened. And they were mortified, naturally they would be. Anyhow, at that time, that day I met Mrs. Reagan, and I met some of the other staff members I hadn't met before. I don't remember who they were now, but everybody was busy working down there. And I was up trying to think of some way that I could get these dogs smelling a little better. And I did try to bathe them, and that didn't help too much. And one at a time, of course, because they were rather undisciplined dogs. And they weren't too easy to handle. But anyhow, I had Muffin out, and I was taking him back to the house, or taking him back to his pen, and he somehow broke away from me, and he ran down to the house, and he ran up to the Reagan's red Ford station wagon that had the front door was open, and then he jumped, and he sat down or lay down on the governor's jacket that was laying on the front seat, and I'll tell you, that was exciting, a few exciting moments there, getting Muffin back out of the car and getting him back up to the pen. He just didn't want to go at all. But the embarrassing part of the whole thing was, of course, that the governor's jacket had a rather distinct odor of skunk on it. And I don't think that pleased him too much. But that was the highlight of my first day with the Reagan family. And, golly, what a way to start. But being the kind of a person he is, didn't seem to bother the governor too much. And subsequent days were much better. The Reagans would come up just about every weekend to work, and they'd bring staff members with them, like Barney and Dennis. Old Gully, there was Rush Hill, the architect. And Patty came up one day and was painting, and everybody chipped in, and it wasn't too long before the house began to look rather habitable. And they had definite plans, things that they wanted to do. They wanted to have a nice big lawn, and they wanted to line the lake with polyethylene to keep the water from percolating down into the ground, and try to keep it full as possible. Of course, all the water in there comes from runoff. There's no spring or anything, but just from the rain. Anyhow, I remember one day, one evening, Mrs. Reagan called me and told me that there was going to be a fellow coming to the ranch, a landscape architect by the name of Philip Shipley. That struck a bell because I had gone to school with a Philip Shipley in Santa Paula. And he had become a landscape architect and had made a rather good name for himself. So I told her, I really, at the time that I knew of was the name of Phil Shipley, and I was wondering. Anyhow, I guess it was about a week or so later where Reagan took the ranch, and there came a truckload of plants and so forth, and Mrs. Reagan, I was out working on the lawn, as I remember, trying to get the land ready and so forth for the lawn, when she said, come on, Lee, let's go up by the barn where Phil Shipley is and see if it's the same one. You knew up there, and sure enough, it turned out to be good old Philip Shipley from Santa Paula. He had a load of plants with him. And it was just like old home care for a while. Golly, you know, it's been 45 years since we've seen each other. So we unload the plants, and a place where they could be watered and taken care of until such time as he could prepare the soil for planting. And didn't think about what might happen to him, but that night the deer came and ate them all right down to practically nothing. So I had to pick them up, and I had to take them up, bring them up in the fenced-in yard here by the trailer and take care of them for a while so they could get them. They'd grow back out to where we could plant them. We didn't realize, you know, that this was summertime by then, and the deer would come down, stay close around the lake during the summer, and they'll eat just about anything that's green, and there was a lot of nice young things like sea anemones and so forth, and they just really loved that. That was just like candy to them. To clarify things, I don't think I've said that the ranch that I'm referring to, of course, is Rancho Del Cielo, which is located on top of Refugio Mountain in the San Ynez Mountain Range, and it's about 2,250 feet above sea level here at the main part of the ranch. The ranch consists of approximately 680 acres, and it's part of the old Tip Top Ranch, which is many, many more acres than that, but this is the headquarters. This was the headquarters of the old Tip Top, which is an extremely well-known ranch in this area. When I first came up here, talking about animals, domestic animals, we had about 35 or 40 head of cattle, mixed breeds, beef cattle, of course, running. They belonged to Raymond Cornelius, and who had sold the ranch to the Reagans. And they ranged pretty well all over the ranch. And then we had the two dogs I mentioned. We had old Fuzzy. Old Fuzzy, he'd been number one dog in the state of California, might I say. He was born, shortly after right after Reagan, the governor took office the first time. He was born on the governor's birthday, and he was a real fuzzy little thing, and they kept him, and they called him Fuzzy. And he was a nice old guy. You know, he had a lot of faults, of course, but he doesn't. But Fuzzy was a nice guy. He was a little bit wild when he first came here, but he calmed down after he got to know me and know Coletta. He was a real good old dog. He only had one bad head, and that's when he liked to walk skunky. Boy, when he'd get skunked up, I tell you, that heavy fur of his would hold it and hold it and hold it, and I've tried everything in the world to get rid of that odor, but it just had to wear on him, and his fur was just like that was terribly heavy. And poor old guy, he was sort of an outcast during the trees. It was bad skunking time. Then, of course, there was Muffin, which I mentioned. He was a cockapoo. He was a cocky little thing. I don't know. He was all right, but I was always afraid something was going to happen for breakfast or dinner. He was small, and he'd go out walking around, and he'd go out in the brush, and he'd just go off, leave Fuzzy and I, and maybe come back 30 minutes after we get back to the trailer, and I was worried about him. So. And he was rather, shall we say, he was like an incorrigible youth. So anyhow, eventually, three or four months, I think it was, when Mrs. Reagan wanted to take one of the dogs back to the Palisades with her, so I thought it would be a good idea she'd take Muffin. She wanted to take Fuzzy, but they finally ended up taking Muffin, and that was good, because we just had Fuzzy then. We got along real well. But then, I guess a few months later, maybe a year later, Reagan's brought up another dog. It was a Siberian Husky. She had belonged to the Wilsons, Bill Wilson and his wife, who are good friends of the Reagans. They had trouble with her. She liked to kill cats. So they decided that they would bring her up to the ranch up here, and where there were no cats. She was a nice dog, except she wasn't too friendly, let's put it that way. She wasn't too friendly. She didn't like men particularly at all. She would hate men, but she liked women. Anyhow, she was a fairly decent dog, but she was a night prowler. She was nocturnal, and she'd go out hunting at night. And she went out with Fuzzy, and she taught him to help her kill skunks, and she invariably bring them home to me. And, oh, golly, at night you hear them out there making all kinds of noises, barking and scrambling around after a skunk. Many a night I went out. Several nights, I won't say many nights, but a number of nights, I didn't go out in the Jeep at 12 or 1 o'clock or even 2 o'clock in the morning looking for them and trying to get them to come home, but I got all stumped up, but usually my efforts were for nothing. And they'd come back, and I could always tell when they got near the trailer, wow, you have to close all the windows. Oh, what a stench. But they were good dogs. Except when they were skunked up, and Fuzzy would always like to ride around in the Jeep with me, of course, but Taka never would. She, the only time she'd ever ride in any vehicle was if she was sitting in the front seat. She didn't want to sit in the back with the dogs. She's that way till this very day. But then, oh golly, it went on for a while, and we only had those two dogs, and then we decided that, Chloe and I decided we'd get a dog, and this is during the former presidential campaign, not the most recent one, but the other one, and the people that brought the Secret Services up there from Pachuma Trails was Ted and Jane Nelson, and they had a cute little female. Her father was a beautiful golden Irish setter, her mother was a border collie, so anyhow, this cute little, about 5 months old puppy we went down and looked at, and we sort of fell in love with her and brought her home, and that's our Millicent, Millie for short. She has been the best dog I think I've ever had in my life. She is a real, real good all-around young lady, and she minds well, she's pretty, she's affectionate, she's just everything and whatever we want in a dog. Of course, I've said many times, she's really not a dog. She just sort of looks like a dog. Actually, the reason we got a female dogging in the first place when we got Millie was so that maybe we thought that she and Fuzzy could have some puppies. Fuzzy was getting a little bit old and being long in years. He never had any pups of his own. And he was quite a gentleman, and Mrs. Reagan thought an awful lot of him, as well as the governor did, too, and we thought it would be nice if we could get maybe a little puppy to look like Fuzzy. But, so eventually, Millie got pregnant, and she had 8 pups. I forget how many males and how many females, but she had 8 pups anyhow. Well, anyhow, the night that she had the pup, that was quite an experience. We'd taken to the vet, and kept checking her, and we knew that at a certain evening, probably, she would have her puppy. So up in the wooden barn up on the hill there, where it used to be the old goat barn, up where I had my garden, there was a shallow wooden box. And I brought it down to the trailer, and I put it in the living room by the couch, and I put some toweling or something in the bottom, I forget what now, but anyhow, the time came. thoughts about the couch. Oh, she wanted to get away from that little black thing. She, it was black in color, and she just wanted to get away from that. But anyhow, after a minute or so, I coaxed her back down into the box, off the couch, and she had seven other puppies. And we were only able to keep five of them, and we picked there were two that were sort of looked like fuzzy, but they were all black. They had a little bit of white on them, and then there were black and white sort of short-haired dogs. Then there was another one, a little female there, she looked a lot like Fuzzy. She had his coloring and pretty much his form and the whole thing, but it wasn't very long. She wasn't exactly short hair, but she was close to it. Anyhow, eventually, we named these little puppies. Let's see. The black one, one that we decided we were going to keep named Junior, and his twin brother, the Reagans, decided that we'd give it to Bill Wilson, so we named it Wee Willie Wilson. We gave it to him. I suppose the Wilsons renamed it, but they took him down to El Refugio Ranch and left him. And then we had a little female we called Sissy. And then, let's see, there was another one that was a short-haired black and white. One of them was very timid. We called him Bashful. And the other one we just hadn't quite named yet. But anyhow, we had these pups to give away. And I thought, well, you know, a lot of people would like to have a dog, maybe a little pup like that that came from the Reagans. As an enticement to get people to take these dogs, I'd take some pictures of the Reagans holding them, and whichever dog the people might choose, or the person might choose, we'd have the Reagans autograph a photo for him. And so anyhow, I gave little Sissy to a Forest Service boy that was up there, and then young Ron Reagan took one of the little black and white short-haired ones, and he named him Rhino, and then Rhino's let him race with me, but he used to like to race the Jeep. And he actually, I have, on several occasions, I have clocked him at 35 miles an hour. And on the level, and for a little dog, that wasn't half bad. But he, when we'd go up through the back country in the Jeep, well, he'd always like to run, and he and Millie would run along, and he became a very, very healthy, husky, young male dog. I can't call him a pup, but he'd outgrown a pup by that time. By the time he was a year old or a little better than a year old, he was very, very husky. He had a beautiful pair of shoulders on him. And today he used to like to race. He also had another habit that when I would leave and go to town, and he and Millie and Fuzzy would go out by the road here in front of the ranch by our gate along the road out here, and they lay out there along the road waiting for me to come home. And then they, when I'd turn in the gate, why, they'd come running along and jumping and barking a little, and Brian would like to race along. And I'd go down, I'd always sort of look for him to be out there. I didn't really like him to be out along the road, but it was not a heavily traveled road. It was by a ranch. It's a private road that's owned by the people that have property along this area. And I didn't think there was going to be anything too bad, but I'm gone anyhow. One day when I went down to get Chloe to bring her up, I came home and saw that there was no rhino around. Millie and Fuzzy, but no rhino. And I got up to the trailer, there was a note on our gate from a fella that had been working up the road at Denise's, and he said in the note, and he left his phone number, and I called him later on the telephone. He said that he was coming down the road from work and heading back down San Ynez Valley and heading for the main gate on Refugio Road, and rhino was out there, and rhino chased ran in front of his car, and he ran over and killed him. Oh, boy. Oh, I feel badly about that. Anyhow, he said he buried him out there along the road, just right across from our gate. So, next morning, I went out there, and of course, Millie and Fuzzy went out there with me, and I dug up rhino, and I took him down the lawn and washed him all off. And we wrapped him nice heavy black polyethylene material we had left over from the lining our lake down here. And we went up on the hill, up in the trees, first hill, east of the house. I dug a grave there, and we laid him away, down in there carefully. And we got some rocks and put on top of his grave and made it sort of a, it was a rather attractive little place for him. And that's where he lies. We hate to see Rhino go, but he was such a good guy, he really was. And Millie and Fuzzy missed him. It was obvious they missed him for a long time. Anyhow, the governor named a little hill up there after that. He named it Mount Rhino. I don't remember the date that all this happened, that Rhino was killed and buried him and so forth, but it had to be probably sometime late in 1978 or fairly early in 1979. So we went along then with three dogs for quite a while. There was Fuzzy, and there was Tocker. They were going out regularly on their skunking expeditions. But Millie would always stay away from the skunks. He never did learn to become a skunk dog. End of side one. Let's turn the cassette over now. dog didn't think much of Big Green and Ink and done without him. Talked with Polly and all for a long time. And Bertie took him sort of as a matter of course. But, and Lily, she wouldn't even stay in the same room with him for quite a long time, at least a month or more. But eventually, they learned to get along, to respect him, and Lily became quite protective. In other words, she took him under her wing, and she treated him like she thought that he was her puppy, and he treated her like he thought maybe Lily was his mommy at the time, and they became very, very good friends. They'd play, finally, Lily finally had some way they would play with her. Taco would play, and Bud getting too old to play, and so she had another dog. She sort of replaced Rhino, and she didn't, she wouldn't let anybody, you know, hurt Victory or even act like they wanted to. She'd always get between them. Several times I've seen Taco, and she got a little bit vexed with Victory would snap at him, and Millie would right into Taco immediately. Getting back to Fuzzy, during the summer of 1985, Fuzzy was getting pretty old, and several years he had arthritis, rheumatic arthritis, and he was gradually deteriorating, and it got along in the late summer, early fall, 1980, that he was hurting a lot, and our vet was Rick Vandenberg Ballard, Ballard Animal Hospital, thought maybe that we ought to think a little bit about putting him out of his misery, poor old guy. And then he got to where his bowels were uncontrollable, and he was just not having a very happy life. So finally, the governor did agree, after talking to the veterinarian, Rick Vander again, about it, and we decided that, well, it'd be nice if maybe Rick would come up here sometime and up to the ranch here on top of the mountain, and we could put him away and get him to sleep quietly. So it was October the 20th, 1980. I remember the day very well, because that's the day we shipped our cattle at the end that year, and several other things happened that day. Anyhow, along about 5 or 5.30 in the evening, here came Rick Vander with his assistant Ruth, and we got the Jeep, we got Fuzzy, and we took him up on the hill on Mount Rhino, where Rhino was buried, and Rick gave him his shot, and he went quietly to sleep, and we buried him up there. And that was the end of, you might say, the Fuzzy era, because it was. He was close to 14 years old. Finally, for the state of old guys, he's a lot better off, but he did suffer for a long time. I know, and he wasn't really, well, his life just had no meaning to him. And we all missed him for a long time. It took a long time to get over missing him. As a matter of fact, we still miss him, bless his old heart. And Millie missed him too, like she would. But she and Fuzzy were always very good friends. They were always together, you might say. Millie kind of looked out for him, just like she looked out for poor Rhino when he was here. The way she looked out, same way she looked out for Victory. So that left us with three dogs. That's the way we are right now. Here it is, June 15th, 1981, and we still have the three dogs. We have Taco, which must be about 7, and then Billy, who was 5, and then there's Victory, who was, well, let's see, February, March, April, May, June, yeah, he's 16 months old now, and becoming about the horse. It's going to be a little more difficult for me to relate too much detail about the horses because I don't really remember everything about them. They're not, haven't been as close to the horses as actually they are to the dogs. It's not as uncommon familiar to come in the trailer. In the trailer somewhat when he was a little younger, and so I haven't had any horses in the trailer. You might say that, I haven't been quite as close to them, but it's because I remember when I first came up here. Well, we didn't have any horses up here at that time, but we did have a couple. I think down at, down at Bill Wilson. Taking care of Little Man, who was thoroughbred, and who the governor had raised. He had his mother, and he grew him. In fact, the governor, as he had related to me, used to raise thoroughbreds, and that's what Little Man was. So he is. He's a thoroughbred. But thoroughbreds, of course, are racehorses, and the governor used to raise thoroughbreds to sell, not to race himself, but he kept Little Man, and he jumper out of it, the way I understand it. So, Little Man's getting along. He must be, he's about 18 or 19, and he's still a pretty good horse. Had a little trouble with him after they brought him up here. I was up there, I guess, maybe 4 or 5 months before they brought the horses up. And he hurt his fetlock. I think it was his left rear leg that became rather severely infected, and they had to take him to Mr. Davis, to the university, to be treated up there. He was gone for about 6 or 7 months. But Gualyalfa was a gray Arabian that was originally foaled on Catalina Island. Understand, he was a Wrigley. It was a Wrigley horse. And then he went to Scottsdale, Arizona, for training, and he became, they said, quite a show horse. Said he has a whole room full of trophies back there in Scottsdale. And he told how he had those two horses for a while, and my uncle, being a Arabian, and he was always sort of a minx, as I call him. He's a nipper. He used to like to sneak up behind you and nip you and dance off. Kind of stand there with his head arched, his tail up in the air, and his ears hooked up, but just to say, "Hi, I gotcha." Oh, but we got him over that finally. But he's a good horse. And then, let's see, yes, and then there was Little Man. Not Little Man, but No String. No Strings came along about, what year was it? Must have been. I came up in 75, must have been about, it must have been about 76, I guess. So he came up there, and he was brought up by Mr. Cornelius, father of Raymond Cornelius, who owned the rafts here, and sold the rafts to the governor, and the regulars to raise them. Anyhow, those things had been ridden on the Visitadores ride by a friend of the Reagan's, Judge Bill Clark, San Luis Obispo, and anyhow, he came up here, and so that then gave us three horses. Mrs. Reagan would ride those things, but he was her horse, and she really enjoyed him, and that gave us three horses, and the governor would ride Little Man, or he'd ride Gualyalfa. So we were getting along just fine when, about a year or so later, I don't know what year, it must have been about, 1977 maybe, we got a call that we were going to have another horse coming, and he was coming from band, horse band, and I was to meet him down at the Wilson's El Refugio Ranch on a certain day and take him off and put him down there. And I did. I met the band. I took this rather spirited, not too old, fairly young gelding. They're all geldings, by the way. These horses I'm mentioning are all geldings. And he was a little bit nervous and excitable. And anyhow, I led him from the road into the trail up there at the Wilson's. And that's very nice. Oh, that's the year we had the gully washers come up. It was long about August, I remember. Might have part of July, first part of August, we had a subtropical storm come up right on Mexico, and it blew and it rained and poor old Catalina, or young Catalina, was out in it all night. And he was down there for a couple days, and then I got some people with, well, I got Ann and Ted Nelson, who had the Chuma Trails and the Secret Service, who rent the horses from me. I got them to take the horse trailer, and went down and got Catalina, and we brought him up here. And he had a blanket and everything, but it took him a while to get used to it. He didn't even know what a carrot was. He came up here, he wouldn't eat carrots. Of course, he was an old man on a pecking order for a long time, and he didn't mix in with the other horses. It took him a long time to get to where he'd mix in. And he wanted the herd. They'd always chase him, and he was reluctant to stand up for himself until we got another horse. So anyhow, that gave us four horses. So Catalina was a little flighty, so nobody seemed to ride him very much. But in the meantime, there was this, when I first came up there, there was this young gal, this girl, her name was Elizabeth Nielsen. We called her Liz, and she was a cute little thing, and she was a very good horsewoman. She lived right down the hill here below us in a ways. Her mother and father, her mother was Nicole Nielsen, and father was John Nielsen, and Liz had some brothers, and some older sisters, and so forth. But anyhow, she was a very good horsewoman. She was only 13, but I got her, I talked to the governor, and he said, it'd be okay if Liz would ride the horses, and she used to come up and ride, about once a week at least. And she'd ride different horses, and she got with Laliaco became a favorite. He never rode Little Man. Nobody ever rides Little Man with the governor. Present now, of course. But she got to where she'd ride Catalina some. He was rather spirited, and nobody seemed to want to ride him too much. But Liz liked him, and they became real close friends and ride him. To this day, Liz prefers to ride Gualianco, and when she comes up with Bush very often, lives down in San Andreas Valley now and doesn't get a chance to come up. And after all, she's 19 now. She's a year growing up. And anyhow, that gave us four horses. And we were getting along fine when all at once here, when was it? It was the summer of 1980 when the governor came up here. We received a horse from Del Rio, Texas, and, brought up here by a Mr. Taylor, who owned a ranch, and he gave the governor this quarter horse. His name was El Dormito, as I think that's what his name is. Anyhow, he was supposed to be Sleepy in Spanish, so half the time I just call him Sleepy, which is a lot easier than El Dormito or whatever. But anyhow, he is a very, very good quarter horse. And I haven't ridden him, but Liz has, and some of the other people have. And some of the military attaché or maybe that comes up here with a present, and he rides him about his butt every time. And they say he's been ridden by others, and they say he's a real good horse. But then he became the low man in the totem pole. He was at the bottom of the pecking order, and that gave Catalina somebody to pick star, and that just pleased Kevin to death, so he mixed in pretty well with the herd, and he's one of the boys. Rico has some smiles. For a long time, he stood way out on the edges and wouldn't come in and associate with the other horses, but he came one of them, and he still, though, still stands out. Catalina, you still let Catalina run him around and pick on him a little bit. In fact, all the horses would pick on him a little bit, but they get along pretty well, and Donito knows how to kick. And he's left his mark on a few of them. And here just recently, golly, when was that? I remember the day, it was about a month or so ago. Well, before that, though, it was, before the inauguration, was notified, I remember, by Dennis LeBlanc, the president's staff, that somebody was giving him an American saddlebred five-gated mare. They were going to bring her out here and lift it up to me. And, golly, I didn't know what to do with a horse like that. So I stalled around, and finally I talked to the lady that had given the present the horse. Her name was Mrs. W.H. Weldon, Betty Weldon of Jefferson City, Missouri. And eventually I met her, a very charming lady. And she did bring out this mare, beautiful 4-year-old mare by the name of Wills Fancy. She is a daughter, or she is a daughter of what has been Will Shriver. He was a world champion, American celebrate stallion. And he'd been built by Mrs. Weldon. And she was so friendly. Anyhow, Mrs. Weldon brought her out here along about, it was right about April, 1st of May. I forget just what date it was, but she came out and she brought her daughter Tony, a very charming young lady, and the trainer Royce Cates and his cute little blonde wife Anne came along, and they delivered this mare, and it was very, 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 very gentle and a very affectionate horse. I've never seen a horse as gentle and as sweet as Fancy is. And she's out there, but about 2 days after she came in the heat, and oh boy, did we have fun. Golly, those geldings, they didn't know they were geldings, and they were kicking and fighting and over her, and no strings finally won out. But after about a week of that baloney, he decided it wasn't worth it anyhow. And he was chasing, there for a while, he was chasing Valianco all over the ranch. And it was quite a mess. Valianco and Hill Springs had always been such close friends until that time. Until this female came between them and ruined a beautiful friendship. Well, anyhow, I forgot that before that, it must have been old girl, I don't know, about 3 months ago or so. And I was reminded again, this is the middle of June, 1981. But I think it was long, it was in the late winter, early spring when, I'll tell you when it was. It was the day before the Reagans got ready to go to Washington to get ready for the inauguration. Golly, was that long ago? Yes, it was, because President Portillo of Mexico had given the president an Arabian stallion, and his name was El Alamein, and they brought him up here. Oh my goodness, I had gone to town to get Coetta, and when I was down there, the Secret Service had called me and said, "Hey Ray, we've got that horse up here." And Ren Hancock had accompanied the person, whoever he was, that brought him up here, and they put him in the, anyhow, I talked to him, and they put him in the nose-string stall, and it wasn't at all adequate for a got back up there where he was being pretty good, but our Secret Service boys had obliged him to take him some hay out in the field and got no horses way out there to keep on the thing. So they wouldn't be around him because he was probably to tear him apart. I mean, boy, he didn't want any other horses around. That was for sure. And all night, they were pretty good. And along about the next morning, about 5 o'clock in the morning, I heard our horses coming in, so I scrambled out of bed, got dressed real quick, and went down and just in time to see no strings and hell all rain. Next minute, through the corral fence, which was 2x6s, weren't very close together, and I was afraid one of them was going to break a leg or something. Anyhow, I got some more hay, and I got our horses back out in the field. And then about 7 o'clock, I called our vets down at the Old Valley Equine Clinic, and I got Dr. McIntosh up there, and he said, we're going to have to get that horse out of here. That's tight, and that's no place for him. Somebody's going to get hurt. So I asked him if he could find a place, and it so happened that Barney Nagy came up that day and brought some stuff from the house, and the vets were playing out in the front of the store here. Anyhow, Barney, he knew all about it. And so anyhow, he said that when he got back to Los Angeles, he was going to go back, you know, here for a short time, an hour or two. And then he said when he went back, well, he'd tell the governor about what was going on. And, so along about 1:30 or about 2 in the afternoon, I heard from Dr. McIntosh, and he said he was sending somebody up. I forget what the witness voice is coming up with a pickup trailer, a horse trailer, and Dr. McIntosh's partner, Dr. Schultz, I think it is. Anyhow, they were going to come up and pick up El Alamein and take him down to a place in San Jose Valley, the name of Legacy Arabians, owned by a man by the name of Andrew Delamater, Andy, we call him. And that was good news to me. So I hadn't heard from the Regis. So I got on the phone and I called the governor and he said, oh, yeah, Barney had told him. And I said, what we're going to have to do, we're going to have to board him down there, or we're going to have to, if he ever got out, he'd kill our geldings, so we'd have veterinary bills like he would flee. So we took him down there and he's still down there. And he's a beautiful animal. We have many pictures of him, and he is a very, very gorgeous animal. But we still haven't had his papers as of this date. Of course, the president mentioned, President Portillo, just had another get together, and I hope that that our president got the papers fell all of me from President Portillo, so we can see just who he is.